Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Raw Review edition of the show. And it is July 2nd, 2019. Couple days away from Independence Day. A lot of you taking time off work, extended weekends, and hope everybody has a safe and fun holiday weekend. Of course, I'll still be back tomorrow night to discuss SmackDown Live and all of the fallout that comes from Raw, which I would imagine that there would be from, to be totally honest with you guys, one of the best Raws that I've seen in months, if not more than a year. It was watchable. As if that's the bare minimum now, but it was very watchable. It was exciting at times. Well booked, not without its flaws. And of course, we'll get to those, but this is mostly a positive show from WWE. It seems as if this is a long overdue show that gave fans something to get excited about. And I would assume that the ratings would reflect this as well. From AJ Styles turning heel to The Undertaker returning with a kind of an explanation to, of course, the opening of Raw with Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. And I will start there in just a minute. But if you haven't joined us before, thank you for joining us. There are a lot of options out there for the wrestling fan, and I'm glad that you stumbled upon us. Or if you are a longtime listener, thank you very much. This is a show that is by a fan for fans. So check us out four times a week and sometimes more, maybe more, depending on if it's a pay-per-view week or not. As Fox rolls into its Friday SmackDown schedule in the fall, we will have to adjust accordingly. But as I currently, as the show currently stands, we record Sunday and then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So tomorrow, again, as I said, SmackDown, and then on Thursday or Friday, one of the two, because obviously Thursday falls on a holiday this year, I might be doing a recording on Friday with my co-host Mary Grader this week, and excited to be talking to her about an extremely eventful week, obviously with Paul Heyman and Eric Bischoff being appointed executive directors of Raw and SmackDown respectively, to all the fallout from this Raw and to what will be an exciting SmackDown. SmackDown is being aired right now as we speak. So I'm sure that there will be a lot to discuss this week, and always a fun thing to do to bring in a co-host and get another's opinion on the whole deal that is WWE and the debacle that is sometimes WWE. So again, Thursday, I'm leaning more towards Friday only because, again, of the holiday. So keep your ears peeled for that audio coming to you later this week. Now, as I said, I want to talk about Bobby Lashley and Braun Strowman. A feud that was utterly ridiculous, again, over the past few weeks, it has been utterly ridiculous, has had little to no build. We've seen them in tug of wars, in arm wrestling matches, and now we get this. And this is one of those turning points in a program that actually makes you care. Before this, I want everyone to raise their hand for those of you that actually cared about the program between Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. Anybody? Bueller? Right. It was a feud that was nothing more than a Vince McMahon special of it's the big man versus the big man with little to no context, little to no backstory, and now we have one. The program has essentially, to me, started as of July 1st, 2019, between Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. And was that stage meant to collapse? Yes. The LED board meant to implode? Yes. Of course. I tweeted this out earlier. Of course it was staged. It was not impromptu, okay? It was meant to happen. But that doesn't matter to me. When I'm watching wrestling and wrestling's good, that part of my brain goes away and I care only about the story and I get invested in the story. And I am now invested in Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley. A sentence I did not think I would say coming out of Monday Night Raw. And I'm saying it, and now I'm extremely interested to see the follow-up. What I would not like them to do, and what I'm fearful of, and what they have a history of doing, is after a big angle, a big spot, you'll have both guys come back next week like nothing happened. No neck brace, no crutch, no anything. And I really hope they don't make that fatal mistake, which would make the whole thing look like a clown show if they do that. And I'll have faith that they won't, because it was such a big spot. It's got a lot of attention. It's got a lot of people talking. And it's got me talking in a very positive fashion. I would give that an A to an A minus of a segment. There was no 20-minute promo to open Raw. It was straight in your face. False count anywhere. They were both extremely physical. And obviously ends with Braun Strowman slamming Bobby Lashley through the LED board to the back. And I could do without the insane amount of fireworks that go off. It almost looked like a pre-4th of July spectacular. I know that it's supposed to be dramatic and they're supposed to make it spectacular. And I understand that. I'm with you on that. I would have just toned down the fireworks a little bit because it looked a little too much. But that's just a small tweak in what otherwise I'm typically destroying the opening segment of Raw. Very well done by the booker, whoever idea this was. Great. Loved it. Got me invested. You have me now. You have me for this program. And where they go from here is anybody's guess. Because, I mean, you can't continue to try to top the program in this fashion, right? It can't be just trying to one-up the program via slamming next time Braun Strowman gets slammed through something. I mean, I don't want the program built around stunts. I want the program built around a good story and a good reason why Braun Strowman did it and what Bobby Lashley is going to do to Braun Strowman and why the next time that these two lock horns. I'm fearful that it'll become a spot fest and it'll become very one-dimensional, as the Braun Strowman character has over the last year, of just being this big dumb oaf that is super strong and lifts up big things and tips big things over. And I just don't want this to carry into this program, because you have people talking. It was a acclaimed, very highly regarded segment, and for good reason. When is the last time we have been talking about a Monday Night Raw open in this positive of a light? It is something that you can really build off of. I don't know what the end game is. I don't know if they expected this to be as positively received as it has been. And I'm just glad that it got the attention that it deserved. It got the review that it deserved. And for Bobby Lashley, who up until this point, and yes, he had his Intercontinental Championship run, and it was a nice pairing with Leo Rush, and he had his poses and his weird, awkward promos and his his three sisters and all that nonsense that he's been dealing with since he came back to WWE. Now you have him the most relevant that you've ever had him in WWE. And yeah, you could say, well, when he was facing Umaga at WrestleMania, I'm talking about this run right now. Since his return, he is the most relevant he's ever been. Use him. He is a hell of an athlete. His promos are awkward. He's not the best talker, which is why they gave him Leo Rush as a mouthpiece to begin with. But you could give him in short bursts, bullet points, and have him just fill in the blanks, which is how I think promos should be done anyway. But I wouldn't have long drawn out promos from him. He's not a good go-home promo guy. He is a guy that you just give bullet points to and just say, Bobby, we trust you. You're a veteran. You're smart enough to fill in the blanks. Here's where we want to go. Get us there. And just give him a 2-minute promo or less. It doesn't have to be long from him. Just give us a real promo from Bobby of what he's thinking. Maybe next week they have, live via, whatever medical facility they're at. I'm fine if you keep these two off TV Or if you bring them to the arena, they need to be disabled in some kind of way, right? You can't have them just walking out as if, you know, they just came from the local Starbucks. You need to have them, in order to sell this angle, in some kind of physical peril from the previous week, or this whole thing will be blown up and this whole segment will mean nothing. So that is what needs to be done. Again, I don't know the end game for these two. Maybe they're probably formulating that as we speak based on the reception that this segment got, and it got a very good one. So this could be drawn out till SummerSlam, and you know, I'm fine with it too, because not only has Bobby Lashley gotten stuck in the abyss, but Braun Strowman's not far behind. I mean, let's be honest, ever since he lost his WWE Championship match with Brock Lesnar because he destroyed Vince McMahon's limo, he's been on a downward spiral and in no man's land. I mean, okay, he comes out and destroys Sami Zayn. Big deal. All right? He is also the most relevant that he's been in quite some time, many months. And I'm happy for both of these guys. It was well executed. The tone of the announcers was also very real. So applaud all three announcers on that. And the camera angle that they used, that was kind of, it was like a side angle, but a distant side angle. Again, I'm not a videographer, so I don't know the names of these, the proper terms, but it was a very macro side angle of the incident that looked very real. They didn't have a camera preset up behind the LED board. That would have made no sense, even though it would have been a cool angle. It would have completely taken away from the reality and authenticity of that spot, and they didn't do it. They didn't do a Shane McMahon limo, head through the limo or whatever it was before WrestleMania a couple of years ago, where there was a camera just happened to be inside having a live feed connected to the TV network. They didn't have any of that. Thank you for that. Well done all around. Hats off to the producer. Hats off to the creative. Hats off even to Vince McMahon on this for signing off on it. And hats off, of course, to Braun Strowman and Bobby Lashley, who executed it to near perfection and have me hooked and wanting me to see more. And that is always key and very rare. It's rare these days to want to see more of a program, and that's one I am looking forward to see what the follow-up is. So that was good. The Undertaker returning, I think, is also, it may not be the second biggest story. I think AJ is, and we'll get to that in a minute. But I want to touch on Undertaker returning. Boy, they love to stretch out his entrance, don't they? They're like, guys, let's kill 20 minutes of TV time with Undertaker's entrance. I mean, we got time to kill. Let's stretch Undertaker's entrance to 20 minutes. And he's one of the few that you can do it, and it feels drawn out, but it doesn't feel painful if you were doing it with someone else's entrance. Undertaker is just such a special character and an icon that you are worth, in your mind, it's worth the wait to see him because it's such a special and rare occurrence. So again, but having him come out after Drew and Shane came out and you gave the Undertaker credit and tried to tell the crowd that it was Roman Reigns who begged the Undertaker to come back to help him, which of course we all know wasn't true. And Undertaker came out and explained himself, as I said at the top of the show, kind of, because he said you want to know the why? Yeah, Taker, like, please tell us why. And he said, well, he's the reaper of wayward souls. And it's like, okay, well, we've heard that. You can apply that to anything that you say ever for any promo in any program. Give us something. Give us specifics of why you came back and attacked Shane and attacked Drew McIntyre. And he gave us a little bit of why he attacked Shane, and that is that he basically saw Shane getting too big for his own ego, and that he did respect him after the Hell in a Cell match at WrestleMania a couple of years ago. But now that Shane has got an inflated head, he's now going to basically burn in hell, and that death is coming for him. So that was a little bit extreme for The Undertaker as well, mentioning death on a wrestling program. Usually that's a no-no, but in the context of the Undertaker character, it made sense. It was just like, okay. Well, usually you just like talking about taking people's souls, which is implying that, you know, you're going to do damage to them beyond the physical body. But to say that death is coming for them is, whew, that's a little much for a PG product, but I'm not complaining. It's just shocked me a little bit. And of course, if you notice, so he talked about Shane and I guess he kind of gave a reason and he never mentioned Drew McIntyre. Not even once. Notice that? He just talked about Shane. And I understand that the focus is really on Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns right now. That's the pairing in this tag team is it's Roman going after Drew and Undertaker going after Shane for suddenly getting a big head and Undertaker wants to come back and deflate him, I guess. So I understand that. And if Undertaker is going to be indeed having a program with Drew McIntyre at WrestleMania 36, then you would want to keep these two distant. And you would want to only have them cross paths when it's time for them to have to cross paths. Even though Drew did talk about Undertaker, Undertaker didn't respond in kind to Drew in any kind of direct fashion, which just tells me they're keeping these two distant for now. I'm in favor of a WrestleMania match with these two. I think it could be very entertaining. Drew could make Undertaker look very good. He's certainly seasoned enough now. He's got the look. He's got the promo. He's got just all the tools right now to get a nice rub off Taker and to use that as another launching point in his career, which is all about making new stars, and that could very well do that. So overall, I mean, I didn't expect any physicality. Undertaker doesn't need to come out and take a beating. I don't want him to take a beating at this point, risking injury, to be honest with you. And he didn't need to come out and do any physicality and have any kind of interaction, physical altercation with Shane or Drew. It was executed the way that it should have been, and that was Taker making an appearance, killing a lot of TV time with his entrance, giving us acceptable explanation, because I told you I would take anything, and I'll take anything, so I'll go with this, that Taker explained why he attacked Shane. And so that was nice to see. And so we'll have to see where this goes. And I fully anticipate that this match with Roman Reigns and with Shane and Drew McIntyre at Extreme Rules will probably end in some kind of wonky, honky-tonky fashion. I do not believe it'll be a clean, crisp win for Roman and Taker. But that time will tell. Time will tell. We are only, 2 weeks away from Extreme Rules? So lots of time between now and then, but I think that this is more of a program that the seeds are going to be set for, particularly Shane, between Drew and Taker, that the seeds will be planted at Extreme Rules. Maybe Taker and Roman win, and then Drew viciously attacks Undertaker, and we don't see Undertaker for months, leading to Undertaker return later in the year, challenging Drew McIntyre to WrestleMania 36 match. I mean, there's multiple ways to do it, but keep an eye out for that. This is all about Drew, and I believe it's all about Taker seeds being planted for a future match. So that's another thing I really like, too. So that's two in a row of things that I enjoyed. Something that, because I got to mix it in, and I told you that there were a couple of things that were lowlights for me. And one of them was Becky Lynch. And to a lesser degree, Seth Rollins. I know they appeared on screen at the same time. And I know that they kind of have to right now because they're in a tag team match coming up. So you can't have them really appear separately. I hope that after this tag team match that they go their separate ways and we never see them really hanging out backstage or cutting promos together again. Becky Lynch is getting very awkward on the mic. There's no other way to put it. I'm not against her. I'm not turning on her. I'm just uncomfortable by her. Her trying to be funny about Seth was weird. She was just making like weird noises, weird sound effects about Seth, and it didn't make a whole lot of sense. I know that it was supposed to be comedic and comedic in the way that it was, oh, it went on too long. And oh my God, is she just going to stop with these sound effects? Like, no, like it was very weird. It was very weird. And they had kind of an interaction that felt forced at times of them trying to be cute and natural together. Like they're, you know, not on camera. And it felt like they knew they were on camera. That's the problem. I'm not feeling them on camera right now. They don't have a very good chemistry when the camera's on. And it's because I think they know the camera's on and they don't know how to act. Because how they act when the camera's not on is probably not appropriate for their characters when the camera is on. So they're trying to find some hybrid version of it. And it's just coming across awkward. I'm not interested in seeing them on screen again after this program runs its course and Baron Corbin and Lacey Evans lose, and they will. So yeah, it's just weird. And Becky Lynch calling people dopes. I'm over it. I mean, is she like Elmer Fudd? Like what is, why does she, can't she come up with another name? I know it's PG. You don't have to be, you know, calling, you know, people swear words or whatever, but there's gotta be a better word than dopes. Please, Becky, you're killing me here. You're killing me. And then furthermore, something I did like, though, was Maria and Mike Kanellis interrupting. Maria's a underrated promo, I believe. I think that she's believable. Her and Mike are a good pairing. And her talking about pushing a baby out and all that. And so they ended up in a match together. And Maria reveals that she's pregnant, although we all think she's just BSing. Which I don't really honestly know yet. She didn't let us know. But she suddenly just turned on Mike, saying she's ashamed that he is the father of her children. And it held my interest because these two had a semi, kind of a semi run on SmackDown, and then that just faded away quickly. I believe they were involved with Sami Zayn, and then that just went away, and then we forgot about them completely. And so Maria immediately turns on Mike. I don't know where this is going because they can't have a match together. This is, you know, the intergender match, period, right? Mixed tag versus intergender. There's a difference. But don't worry. It's okay if Becky Lynch taps out Mike Kanellis. But God forbid if Mike Kanellis ever tried to tap out Becky Lynch. If it's a mixed tag match, the men can only compete with the men and the women can only compete with the women. Am I missing something here? Or is it just trying to get, you know, the hell with the rules? It's okay because it's a man on, it's a woman on man violence. So that's okay. And we're also going to say F the rules on the mixed tag guidelines and say, it's okay. Not only is it woman on man, so that makes it okay. But also we're going to just say, you know what? It doesn't matter if we're going away from men versus men and women versus women. As long as Becky's tapping out Mike, it's good. Gets over Disarmor. People go, wow, it did nothing but anger me. And maybe I'm just the cynical a-hole. I don't know, but it really bothered me that they did that. Come on. Why couldn't she? I mean, I know that she couldn't touch Maria because, you know, he's pregnant or she's pregnant or whatever, or said she's pregnant or lied or whatever, but Becky backed off, which right move. You have to, right? But they couldn't have just have Seth Rollins, you know, give him the stomp. And then even if Becky got the pin, I'd be okay. But the fact that she actually made him tap out is just, oh, it hurts my soul, my wrestling soul. It hurts that deep when they do that kind of stuff. And to be honest with you, they also did it at a much larger scale when Ronda Rousey tagged with Kurt Angle at WrestleMania to take on Stephanie and Triple H. And, you know, she got some shots in at Triple H, all of that. And it was just like, come on, right? Like, if the men are supposed to compete with the men and the women are supposed to compete with the women, then keep it that way. Keep it that way, okay? All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox there. But I am interested in what Maria Kanellis is doing here. It's nice that to have her as a new face of the women's division there. While she may not ever be a serious contender for the championship, that may change. She's still a nice promo. She's easy to watch. And I like her tempo when she speaks. And okay, she's good looking, but so is every other woman on the roster. So that I don't even consider that as part of the equation. So I'm interested in it. So that's a positive. This segment wasn't total trash. It wasn't. I'm just not a fan of Becky Lynch's awkward promos when she tries to be funny or calls people dopes or makes sound effects way too long. That was probably better on paper or in her head than an execution. And then taps out a man in the mixed tag, not intergender, mixed tag match to get the win. So it was like strike one, strike two, strike three, and then that was it for me. So that's just a little side note on something that I didn't like so much on Raw. But back to something I really liked, and that is, of course, the AJ Styles heel turn. I liked it. AJ Styles has been a babyface for a while now. It's time. It's run its course. AJ's felt a little stale, and it's time to reinvigorate his character. It's good timing. He's with his Bullet Club brethren. I like it. I've missed that edgy AJ Styles. It felt more... He started to feel corporate, you know? He started to feel like part of the machine instead of the rebel and the vicious AJ that we all know he can be. And Bullet Club brought that back out of him, that they want to see the real AJ. So what better way to introduce him and reintroduce that AJ that is going to be loved to be hated than to have him attack Ricochet, the beloved babyface that does no wrong and is cool with everybody, United States champion. After losing clean to Ricochet to retain his United States Championship. And the way they beat him down was very good. I like that not only did AJ turn heel, which is the big story here, but they're extending this program with Ricochet. Because, number one, they're trying to get Ricochet over further to give him the rub with it from AJ, who's clearly the bigger star here. They're putting the United States Championship in a prominent picture in the main event of Raw. That's a key, too. And Ricochet and AJ obviously have very good chemistry. Both are extremely athletic in the ring. It is a joy to watch Ricochet in the ring. The crazy SOB that he is and the crazy you-know-what that he can do is just breathtaking. And I am, of course, critical of... You know, how much shelf life does this kind of style have, which I'm still concerned about. I think that a style like this is concerning of, well, how long can he do this? Like, he is not only putting a lot of wear and tear in his body, but he's putting himself at a higher level of risk and sometimes his opponents based on the maneuver that he's doing. That type of style is inevitably, I don't care how good of an athlete you are, it's just science that is a higher risk of a wrestling style. But, you know, I've been critical of the flip and flop and flam type of wrestling that's just spot, 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 no selling, spot, 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 crazy move, 400 flips, you know, 300 moonsaults, and off we go. And, oh, the crowd goes, holy, you know what, holy, you know, and we all chant. I am still not a fan of all that kind of wrestling. Like, I think it's just a spot fest. It's more about the moves than it is the story and the in-ring psychology and just how many cool moves can we get off. That is what I'm still critical of. All that aside, it's still mesmerizing to see what Ricochet can do in the ring. The things he does, you just go, what? And he makes it look like I could do that. You know, I mean, of course I couldn't, but he makes me think I could. It looks so effortless. And that's the key. It's not like he's struggling. He makes it look so easy. And Ricochet's ultra talented. His promos can improve. And look, his promos will improve once he gets more live mic time. He clearly missed a line or got ahead of himself on a line with Charlie Caruso, who was just all over the damn place on Monday Night Raw. And was talking about, you know, last week on Raw, I beat AJ and, you know, I'm not going to make any mistake. And then he just kind of tossed it to Charlie to say, you know, would you make any mistakes? I don't know. She kind of followed up. I'm of course paraphrasing, but the key was to have Charlie talk about mistakes that Ricochet would make or could make or might make. And that was a cue for the Bullet Club to come in, of course. So, I mean, his promos will improve. I'm not concerned about that. He's got a good presence. He's a good-looking dude. And that doesn't hurt. And I think he feels right as United States champion. Anybody else feel that way? He just feels right as United States champion. It doesn't feel like he's being pushed too soon. It doesn't even feel like he's has a championship too soon. So that's unusual. I noticed that. I'm like, well, he's only been here for like a couple few months, and wow, he's champion. But it feels like he should be a United States champion, some kind of mid upper card champion. Not ready for the main, the big belts yet. He's not ready to swim with the big boys just yet. But that's fine. I'm not ready for him to. He should live and breathe and die in the United States Championship picture right now, because it'll give him more exposure. It will, of course, get the United States Championship more exposure, which it needs in a desperate way. Desperate way. And it's getting it. The United States Championship has never felt more important, and Ricochet's held it for 2 weeks. That's crazy. Maybe I'm just super tired right now. My brain's not working right, but that's how I'm feeling. When I see him, I'm like, yeah, like it feels important to him, and that makes it feel important to me. There's no reason to hate this guy right now. He doesn't feel like he's pandering to you. The things he can do in the ring are just otherworldly. And he's got a lot going for him right now with this program with AJ Styles, because they can put on a hell of a match. They've already proven they can. Now what are they going to do when they have 20 minutes in the ring? That's what I want to see, which we all know is going to lead to a Extreme Rules match with these two, and I'm totally fine with that. Predictable? Yep. Right thing to do? Also, yep. So I'm looking forward to seeing what these two can do in a longer timed match, and have Ricochet focus less on the crazy things he can do, because how much more can you top what you're doing? And if that's his motive, what can I do to top this and top and top and top? And if his version and method of trying to top his last match is, what crazier spot can I do? How many more flips can I do? That's not how you top your match. You top your match by using psychology and telling a story, and not just going immediately to, his 720 splash and not relying on that. Relying on learning how to pull a crowd in to a match to get them to pay attention, to care about emotionally the characters in this match, other than just the crowd sitting there going, ooh, I can't wait till he does something crazy. Can't wait till he does something crazy. Because then they only care about the moves. They don't care about the characters. Let me say that again, because I think that's important. Ricochet runs the risk of having the fans care more about the moves than they do about the character. He's not there yet, but if he continues to, or if he starts to, because he hasn't really done it yet, but if he starts to try to up himself by doing a crazier move, the fans won't care about his character, and they'll only be worried about the crazy spot he's going to do, which is extremely superficial and doesn't get fans emotionally involved whatsoever. So Ricochet just needs to be mindful of that as he moves forward. But overall, it's a program I'm looking forward to. I'm fine with it being a long-term program. And as far as AJ Styles turning heel, again, right time to do it. He needed something to change up his character, give him a reboot, a refresh. And this is a good way to do it. With him and the Bullet Club, with Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows, fine. I'm fine with these three being in a trio and being that heel faction that's going to run roughshod over Raw and waiting for babyfaces to rise up against them. That's what you want. That's what you are looking for. It's going to take time for them to build a little heat and for AJ to fully establish himself that, okay, I'm a heel now. Which he did it on Raw, but the follow-up promo, the tone of it, how he talks to the fans are going to be and is going to be key into the direction of his character, which obviously is heel, but why? Does he blame it on the fans? Does he say, I got soft? You people made me soft over the years, and look what's happened. I don't have gold anymore because of you. I mean, there's places you can go with it. And I'm looking forward to this reboot of AJ Styles. Again, his babyface run was very successful. Very successful. It was just time. And they pulled the trigger at the right time. And he has the right people behind him. He has his heaters behind him. His two cronies that he can take the beating, that they can take the beating for him while AJ Styles comes in and at the opportune time so they can do the dirty work for him. It just makes sense. It just makes total sense. So whether the New Day come in after him, I don't know, maybe a new faction. We'll see. We'll see. Maybe even Bray Wyatt shows up. Who knows? But I'm enjoying it. So that's something else I really enjoyed from Monday Night Raw. Was the heel turn of AJ Styles. Samoa Joe and the War Raiders versus the New Day. Oh my God. Now, I have War Raiders down. I'm reading War Raiders. I thought it was the Viking Raiders. Did they change again? I didn't really hear. I don't remember what they said on Raw, but the text I'm seeing from the results of Raw, just as I'm going through this, the War Raiders, did they change it again? Wasn't it the Viking Experience and then the Viking Raiders and then now the War Raiders? Is this just going to be their gimmick where they just continually tweak their name every week? Is that the gimmick? I don't know. I feel very Ascension-like here. They remind me of Ascension. And we all know how they turned out. So, but look, Samoa Joe winning here, right move. But also makes me fearful that, okay, we've seen Joe win. Now let's get to the pay-per-view where you put doubt in the fans' minds. He can beat Kofi. He beat Kofi. But when you get to the big dance and the title's on the line, I still believe that the WWE is not going to pull the trigger with Joe as champion. I still believe that. So while they, for the next couple weeks, may try to make the fans believe and try to put doubt in the fans' minds of Kofi not being able to beat Samoa Joe, if Samoa Joe gets the upper hand the next couple of weeks, look out. Look out. I mean, general rule of thumb, I would say about 75% of the time, the go-home show for a pay-per-view, whoever gets the upper hand typically loses at the pay-per-view. Again, not a hard and fast 100% rule, but in general, that is the case. So if Samoa Joe gets the upper hand the next 2 weeks, you can pretty much take it to the bank that Kofi Kingston retains the WWE Championship at Extreme Rules. So just also something to keep an eye out. But I liked Samoa Joe putting over his finish, having Kofi pass out, and Samoa Joe gets the victory here with the Coquina Clutch. Very good. Very good. We also had Cesaro destroy No Way Jose. Don't really honestly care about that. I mean, I know this is the WWE podcast, but how am I supposed to care about No Way Jose? Somebody please explain. How do I get invested in this character? Because he has a conga line? This guy gets paid, hundreds of thousands of dollars in the biggest wrestling company in the world, and I'm supposed to take a guy seriously that's backstage with a bunch of yo-yos doing a conga line. Sorry, doesn't work for me. So Cesaro destroyed him. Good. I'm fine with that. R-Truth was part of Jose's conga line, and he taunted Maverick, who was watching the show with his wife at ringside. It was just the usual group of mid-carders that chased off Truth before Cesaro inflicted his damage. I mean, it's just the usual suspects. And they all got to run in a straight line, which is just, it's too much. It's too much for me. The Street Profits made their Raw debut multiple times. And I'm not sure. Look, I don't watch a lot of NXT. I would love to. It's called I Don't Have Time, or I would. And maybe, here's a thought. I'm not going to, don't hold me to it, but maybe I will implement a NXT-only show that I do once a week, or I have other co-hosts do without me once a week, talking about NXT only. Maybe I will. That's something I haven't really thought about until just this moment, but let me know what you guys think about that. I just kind of gauge the interest in that. if you guys want to hear an NXT-only podcast once a week on this feed, shoot me an email or tweet me at the WWE Podcast. Again, my email is realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Maybe an idea. Might be an idea. So we'll see. But again, the Street Profits, they're the NXT Tag Team Champions, Angelo Dawkins and Montez Ford. They cut a promo about bringing the swag back to Monday nights, and they were interrupted by a Heyman promo about Brock Lesnar possibly being in the building, but I don't know. Again, Paul Heyman's just going to incessantly tease us. Hey, Paul, how about you don't remind us that he's the Money in the Bank champion, Money in the Bank briefcase holder, instead of coming out every week reminding us he is, to remind us, oh yeah, Brock could be here. I know that the logic is, oh, well, it brings in ratings or gets people excited. You don't know if he's ever going to be here. But by reminding us he could be here and you're going, oh, well, if he shows up, cool. If not, I don't really care either. You're already diluting the interest in having him be there by reminding us, oh, that's right, Brock is champion. Or I keep saying champion. Brock is a Money in the Bank briefcase holder. So how about you just don't show up and have Brock Lesnar just have his music hit and then cash in? Which would be much more of a surprise than reminding us every week. If you're truly trying to make it a surprise for the champions of Kofi and or Seth, why would you do that? Right? So it's a little bit counterproductive, but I understand that they need to just keep it fresh in fans' minds. But if you're trying to make it more unpredictable, wouldn't you just have Heyman not be there? I'm not sure. There's a little bit of a reverse psychology with Heyman always showing up and reminding us that, oh, I'm going to tease you he's here, but maybe he's not. I don't know. I'm going to play coy. It's just a little much for me, but I know what they're going for. I think being counterproductive to the goal that they're actually trying to achieve, right? Okay, but the Street Profits, I don't know what to make of them, to be honest with you. They just kind of debuted, and that's fine. I'm fine with new. Wrestling fans love new. I don't know where they're going with them. They're interesting. I don't know. I guess I don't know if this is the official call-up, but they're NXT Tag Champs. So you would think that if they're NXT Tag Champs that they would still need to show up in NXT, but maybe they're going to be doing, you know, double duty here and also being on Raw, maybe defending their NXT Tag Team Championships. I'd rather just have NXT stay with NXT, to be honest with you. I know that some people look at it as, well, once they lose the belt, they're coming up to the main roster, and that's too predictable. But sometimes, you know what? It keeps NXT in its own world, which is what a lot of fans love about NXT. It doesn't feel like a WWE product, even though it's completely WWE. But from the mind of Paul Levesque, Triple H. So, I don't know what to make of the Street Profits yet. I really don't. I'd like them to stop being, you know, talking in tongues and thug or whatever they talk in, and speak just kind of like, you know, normal. Don't give us a Bray Wyatt promo that we have to decode and, get a decoder in the mail and, you know, send out smoke signals and get a fortune teller. Just tell me how it is. Don't make me sift through stuff. Just be a little straight. All right. The Miz defeated Elias in a 2 out of 3 fall match. We are on the 2 out of 3 fall bandwagon. It's nonstop. And here we are at stop number 40. Of a 2 out of 3 falls match. Of course, this one too can't ever end in a sweep. It's always got to end in a decisive third fall. Always. Always. Why? I don't know. I just don't know. But we had The Miz defeat Elias, and as The Miz was walking backstage before the match, Mercy the Buzzard from the Firefly Funhouse made a cameo in the background. So there are Easter eggs being planted of Bray Wyatt's imminent in-ring return. We've seen this for a couple of weeks now, but I don't know where this is leading. I don't know if that's a hint towards The Miz or a hint towards Elias or neither, or they just decided to go, here's a good way to stick in Bray Wyatt's Firefly Funhouse without doing a backstage segment and doing a full vignette. I think it, again, is leading to a eventual in-ring debut of Bray, but I don't know if it's directly tied to The Miz here. I would hope not. But again, Elias is just continuing to fade away and fade away and fade away. He was the third wheel of the Shane McMahon-Drew McIntyre alliance, the forgotten third wheel. He gets beaten by The Miz clean here. Elias needs something quickly. He's I don't want to say he's dying as a character, but he's certainly wounded. Let's put it that way. Okay. A couple more items here. Carmella defeated Alexa Bliss via pinfall after she attempted a moment of bliss segment with Nikki Cross. And Nikki Cross defeated Carmella via pinfall in a match that was made during the break to further drive the point home that maybe it's Cross who deserves the SmackDown Women's Championship at Extreme Rules and not Bliss. So Cross was asked backstage about the WWE Universe wanting to see her challenge Bayley, but Bliss immediately cut off the interview. So again, you're just seeing this baby step formula of Bliss, who is demeaning and taking the spotlight away from Nikki and using Nikki, and eventually will lead to a Nikki meltdown or snapping on Alexa. So, the 24/7 Championship, Drake Maverick defeated R-Truth via pinfall to win the title. When Maverick and his wife were just about to depart the arena for their honeymoon, and while Maverick's wife was away, he nailed Truth with his luggage and regained the 24/7 Championship. So, again, we are continuing with the Drake Maverick deal. I like Drake Maverick as champion. He's got kind of a weird delivery in the way his mouth moves when he speaks. But that, I think, adds to his quirkiness and character. I think that's an asset. And R-Truth as champion, it's starting to get a little stale. I said originally R-Truth is a good first candidate to be champion. He's a good, you know, comedic wrestler, if there ever was one. And so it's fine, but I might be ready for a change. You know, as Owen Hart once said, enough is enough and it's time for a change. And I'm, you know, taking steps towards that. I'm not quite there, but Drake Maverick is champion. We'll see how long that lasts. You know, as I speak, I should have just checked social media because I'm sure they did some weird crap while they were on the plane or in a bathroom. Who the hell knows? And maybe R-Truth is already champion again. I could very well be the case, and you guys are like, how did you not see that? Well, I just haven't checked social media for that. So it's very possible. So I wouldn't be surprised if R-Truth is, once again, the 10-time 24/7 champion? I don't know. Who knows at this point? But I'm enjoying the just bizarreness of this whole thing. So that's what I liked about Raw, which honestly was a hit more than a miss. I'd give Raw a B+. I really would. Very good show. One of the best I've seen in a while. Concise, about wrestling, unpredictable. Something I haven't felt about Raw in quite a while. It's ironic that Raw is called Raw, right? It's supposed to be raw, uncut, unpredictable. You never know what's going to happen. Yet at the same time, it's never felt more polished and structured and too perfect at times, and perfect cute lines that no one would ever come up with on a whim. So when you have a show called Raw, it's ironic that it's called Raw considering the product that you're getting. But anyway, it felt more like a wrestling show. It felt more like them going back to their roots and what worked. And I like that. So hopefully they keep this up on SmackDown and for the foreseeable future. So again, when Raw deserves credit and WWE deserves credit, guess what I do? I give them credit. This is not a WWE bashing show. Just over the last few months, you know, you could even make case for years, it has felt too polished and too structured and too controlled. And they started to get away from that on Monday night. We hope it's not an anomaly. We hope it's something that's a trend, but time will tell. So, guys, that's all I got for you today. Again, I'll be back tomorrow with my SmackDown Live review. And then Thursday, again, more likely Friday, I'll be joined by a co-host to wrap up everything in wrestling for this week. So, again, check out the website at WWEpodcast.com. A new article was just published yesterday that you guys should check out, and lots of other goodies on there for you. So, guys, until then, I'll talk to you next time.